Would you introduce yourselves, please?
Hello, my name's Leela. I sing in the Duke Spirit.
Hello there, I'm Ollie and I play drums in the Duke Spirit.
If I do it like a professional announcer, I would do photography met painting in art school, you ditched the art, formed a band, and the rest is history, interview over.
We'd all kind of finished our courses, so it wasn't like we kind of totally ditched it. I was actually changing what I studied. I did an art foundation, but then I went on to like do literature and stuff. So I guess it's just a lot. It's not really that it's complicated. It was just kind of long, you know. It's just like a long story. I met Luke. We were really close, and we started writing songs. He really encouraged me to sing at a time when I was like totally scared to sing. Didn't really know if I could do it. Several more years passed by which time myself, Luke and Toby are like sharing a house. We're trying to write songs. They're pretty awful songs, you know. We sort of do a few little bar style shows and have some other friends play with us. And that like, you know, takes you into like another couple of years. And eventually once that's all kind of dissolved and you've realized what was terrible about what you did and what wasn't good enough, that's when you kind of have this like baptism of fire or whatever, and you kind of start again. And it was the starting again that was the Duke Spirit, really. Just based on friendship. People have been in and out of college with each other, in and out of houses and apartments, sharing in London. And so after a kind of like a bunch of years, we put the word out for a drummer, and Ollie coincidentally met a good friend of ours who was in a band at the time. And it was like one of those magical moments where we just said, yeah, look, if you hear of anyone, come in. And it was the next day, this friend phoned back and went, you know, you were looking for a drummer like yesterday.
Monday, we were like jamming out some tunes. Yeah.
Why Solomon originally? It's not as literary as Duke Spirit, and Duke Spirit came from all sorts of literary references. So why Solomon?
It worked in a British context for a while. I don't think it would kind of work so well in America. But that particular thing was just, I was really into Toni Morrison's Song of Solomon. I'd been reading it and studying it, and it became this kind of, you know, that aspect of Bible story that was kind of sensual. That appealed to me at the time. But that was a whole different thing, you know, one of those embarrassing things in the past.
So you did the original 7-inch, which I don't think anybody here has ever heard. I should make you hum a few bars, but I will not torture you with that. But then you put out the EP, and then next thing you know, those dreaded three letters, the N, the M, and the E, noticed the band. So was that a good thing or a bad thing at that moment in time?
No, it was great. I think that's what you want. You want make an EP, make a little foray into the sort of, you know, recording world, and someone's, you know, funding you to do a little bit of starting to, you know, do a little bit of work in the studio, and you kind of hope that someone's going to write about it. And yeah, it was all good.
The label went out of business, and what's really interesting, I think, about the trajectory of this band is how long it really took you to get introduced to the place we are now. So you've had an interesting trajectory to get here, right?
We've just been a very grassroots band. Like, we've always, you know, since the beginning, set out to be that band. We wanted to be a proper band that played the small tours and toured, as opposed to having loads of money spent on massive billboards put up in, you know, various cities. And we wanted to be that sort of word of mouth old school punk rock band, and we've definitely maintained that kind of ethos. So.
I changed my mind halfway through that, though, and wished that someone would just put loads of money into it, and we would just be huge.
I mean, it's costing more bloody money. Yeah. It's been great, and we sort of honed our craft along the way, you know. And Neptune's a different album to Cuts Across the Land, because we did spend that time as a band playing more and touring, and, you know, but when Cuts Across the Land came out, we'd never done a tour, and so, you know, you kind of learn and grow as individuals and collectively.
We're just slightly slower, slower forming, you know. You know, it's our lives, and we've just been kind of gradually unearthing what it is we want to do. And it's enjoyable that it lasts. You know, I'd rather that we were here 6 years on than having made two records very quickly and it all be over or whatever. I mean, I think we all feel very strongly that we would like to continue and make records that connect with more amounts of people. Like, who wouldn't, you know, of course. But we just do our thing. Like, you're not born knowing what it is you got to do. We're just kind of describing ourselves as we march forward, you know, and it takes what it takes.
Especially now, there's no formula to you know, be a band. It's quite healthy in that respect. And yeah, like Leela said, we're just kind of doing our thing, and I think more bands are finding that as time sort of goes on.
Neptune is, I mean, I get it. When I got a single, and then I got another single, and then I got the album. And what's really interesting is it's providing a lot of singles. You know, the album's been out for how long, and there's still, you know, Lasso was just released, you know, not that long ago here. The song's written in England and recorded in Joshua Tree. So that provides, when I was listening to it right before I came here in the car, I got it. I understood what went on there, because it's got the British aesthetic, but you've got the spirituality of where you recorded it in the sound and the mix. And that's probably a mix of your Mr. Goss, your producer. But this was a very intended album. You didn't just go and say, oh, I think we'll go in the studio and make some songs. You really thought about it. And that's why probably it's as good as it is.
Yeah, and there was a little hiatus, you know, between the first album and the second album. We were, you know, we were held onto by our major label for a while until they finally dropped us, and that, you know, period of time was really annoying because they didn't kind of have the guts to drop us, because they kind of thought they better hang on to us for a bit, and then they realized perhaps it was too expensive, and, you know, all this shit takes time. But actually, in that gap, that's where we did our kind of soul searching, I suppose, and that's where the words and the moods and the atmospheres first began forming, in a time of sort of insecurity and a time of kind of, I don't know, just like a kind of blank period where you have to get really creative or let other people navigate your way for you, which we really didn't want. So we took a leap of faith and just got the hell out of there. And so those songs were brewing, you know. We were like steeped in a funny atmosphere for a while until we knew.
This album is like Earl Grey tea.
No, that's not a good quote. but yeah, we had a while to really sort of be ourselves in on the way to making that record.
But what was interesting to me is what I heard you're fond of. You know, Stax and the Saints, and particularly the Dexys. Everybody here knows Come On Island. They don't know that the Dexys over there were this, yeah. You know, they were kind of the 80s, early 90s Motown for the UK for a while, right?
I suppose they inspired us in, you know, that spirit of him seeing Gino Washington and seeing something from another culture, soul music from America, when you come from, you know, a kind of boring part of a rundown part of Britain, how inspiring and how mythical that seems, how romantic it seems. And that's what I get from a band like that. I mean, I'm not saying they're like my favorite band at all. They're just one of many great bands. I'm talking really about the album Searching for the Lost Soul Rebels, which basically slams down in front of you like a huge serving of romanticism about something that's really, really far away, but that you feel connected to, even though you're, you know, born so far away from where the music's coming from. And Dex, that Come On Eileen was like, you know, a big hit when we were like little tiny kids. But before all that, I sort of feel like they're sort of there alongside the Specials, and something very romantic and charming about a regional part of Britain that's not London. It's not London centric, and it's just that album's just a great record that, I don't know, we just got drunk to and partied to so many times, it couldn't help but somehow be in the spirit of what we do, even though we don't really use kind of saxophones, and when, you know, there's not two singers, and it were very, very different, but there's a vibe in there that we adore, you know.
What's it like playing a place like Radio City Music Hall? Is that like an odd venue for you? Because there's like festivals and there's small clubs, and then there's a thing like that where it's indoors and it's 6,000 people. And can you connect in a place like that?
We've played loads of venues like that, and fortunately, you know, I don't mean that in a blasé way. Like, we love places like that. You know, there's so much history there, so many great bands that have played there before us, and to be inspired stepping out onto that stage, you know, we were fortunate enough to do two nights there, and I think it was one of the highlights of this tour. And
I'm all about the glamorous sort of tinges to a long tour, so you know, sparkling, beautiful. I love the red velvet and the sparkliness of it all, you know. I like to get treated to that kind of, I think we all do, don't we, you know.
Definitely,
we
yeah.
can do.
You live in a bus for like 3 months.
But it's interesting the way you said that, and I've never really heard somebody say it quite that way, which is that you live for the sparkle part. You live for the moment where it's not, as they call it, the toilet circuit, and you actually have a real dressing room. It's kind of like rock and roll doesn't have to be, you know, smell like piss, does it?
We've done tons of gigs that smell like piss, and they've been brilliant. And I'll take that smell of piss to the grave with me. But there's nothing else that quite beats the moment where the edge of your vision is kind of, you know, like a stage from 100 years ago. You know, the edges, the frame that you're looking out on has changed, and it's suddenly become, you know, beautiful or Art Deco or whatever. And those are the moments that you get to stop for a little moment and feel a little bit bigger than you are, and try someone else's clothes on for size, and you know, step up to the plate. I think it's funny. It's just funny.
How's the record label going?
We're so happy in America. Great team of people around us, like who never fail to sort of be passionate and enthusiastic, which I don't know if we're kind of incredulous about it at times. I'm not sure that we totally believed that they would be like this, but they are.
After what you've been through.
I think so. They are people that, you know, seem like they're really into us, they understand us, they talk to us, they seem like real people rather than faces in an office, you know.
What I do is a thing called a musical sandwich, and I've done this with 300 bands. What we do is we pick two of your songs as the bread and songs by other artists in between.